And we discuss complexities now in treating the rare disease amyloidosis. The National Institutes of Health cites there are roughly 2,000 new cases per year of the primary type called AL amyloidosis. Thanks to Jeff and Madison, who suggested we talk about it.
My wife was diagnosed in March of 2008. Typically, back then, people would live maybe a year and a half, something like that.
Jeff shared that their wife lived nearly 14 years and credits the hematology treatments. Call in with the question. You can share your thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Anita D'Souza is a hematologist and medical oncologist with Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin Cancer Network and an associate professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. D'Souza, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So can you walk us through, as a physician who works so closely on this disease, what it would be like for a new patient who is, you know, who is a newcomer, who does not realize what amyloidosis is?
Yeah, it's a rare disease. As you mentioned, only a few thousand individuals are diagnosed each year with this disease. So being as rare as it is, physicians sometimes don't think of it when they're seeing patients that amyloidosis is on the differential diagnosis. And what that means for people having this disease is they keep getting new signs and symptoms of the disease. They keep seeking help from the healthcare profession. They see multiple specialists, subspecialists, and it takes several months to sometimes years before that unified diagnosis of amyloidosis is made. And so what that means is at the time of diagnosis, oftentimes people have very advanced disease, they're quite sick, and that makes it even challenging to get them started on treatments because our current treatments are varying forms of chemotherapies and immunotherapies.
Which makes us think with chemotherapy that this would be, which is used in cancer treatments. But, you know, this isn't a type of cancer, is it?
So that's a very interesting question, and sometimes it just boils down to semantics. The underlying disease for light chain or AL amyloidosis, it starts in the bone marrow as a clonal disorder. And so one form of this clonal disorder is the blood cancer called as multiple myeloma, which is a bona fide blood cancer treated with chemotherapy, stem cell transplants, and so on. But in amyloidosis, that clone is very small, typically, and it doesn't have all the features of a cancer. But still, the best way to control that clone is by using treatments that are FDA approved in multiple myeloma. Now we have a regimen that is also approved in AL amyloidosis, but it is a form of chemoimmunotherapy.
You just mentioned, I think, a couple different types of the disease, AL amyloidosis, perhaps one of the primary one. Can you talk a little bit about these different types and what distinguishes them?
Yes. So amyloidosis actually is a term for a protein misfolding disorder or a group of disorders in which proteins misfold and turn into these amyloid fibrils, which has a very characteristic appearance under the microscope. And depending on what the primary protein that has misfolded is, there are many different subtypes of amyloidosis. And currently, we know there are 42 different proteins and peptides that can misfold and cause amyloidosis. And as you mentioned, the most common subtype currently in the United States is the AL or light chain subtype. But another one that is increasingly being recognized is transthyretin or ATTR amyloidosis. And there are two main forms of ATTR. One is a mutation in the transthyretin gene that leads to hereditary amyloidosis, and another one that occurs with aging and what we call as age-related transthyretin amyloidosis. And when we see a patient with amyloidosis in the clinic, it is very important to figure out accurately what subtype it is, because treatment for these subtypes really depends on what is the protein that is misfolding. So for example, we treat AL amyloidosis with chemotherapy, but transthyretin amyloidosis chemotherapy would have no effect on it.
Oh, wow. A biopsy then is involved in confirming amyloidosis. Can you explain like where the tissue sample comes from?
Yes. So when we suspect amyloidosis, doing a biopsy is needed to confirm it. Now, there is a clinical scenario with transthyretin amyloidosis where we have good imaging studies and other blood tests where we now don't need to do a biopsy, but for light chain amyloidosis, a biopsy is very essential. And we typically start with doing a bone marrow biopsy and a fat aspirate, which we take a small sample of fat from the abdominal wall. And typically between these two tests, the bone marrow and the fat, we are able to detect amyloidosis in about 90 to 95% of the time if it is present. But in those remaining 5 to 10% of the time where your biopsies could be negative, it is important not to give up on the diagnosis if the clinical suspicion is high, but to move quickly to doing the target organ biopsy. So for example, if it looks like the heart is involved with amyloidosis, we want to go on to get a heart biopsy. Or in other settings, if the kidney tissue is involved, we do a kidney biopsy.
I wonder, I mean, it's labeled, you often hear like labeled rare disease. Is that an accurate depiction? How common might a misdiagnosis be?
Yeah, so, you know, we have always thought of these diseases as rare, but as in the last, I would say, 3 to 5 years, with increasing awareness, with increasing and improving diagnostics, we are seeing more and more patients being diagnosed. And not just the AL subtype, but also ATTR. So it is certainly moving from being considered as an ultra rare disease to now being something we increasingly see in clinic.
Dr. Anita D'Souza with us, hematologist and medical oncologist with Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin Cancer Network, as we explore new treatments and symptoms for amyloidosis and efforts to raise awareness about this disease. Call in with a question. You can share your comments at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about diagnosing and managing amyloidosis and the latest research on this condition that manifests in different ways, disrupting the body's organs. And a shout out to Jeff and Madison for suggesting we shine a light on this disease. Let's hear from you. Call in with a question. You can share your views at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Anita D'Souza is a hematologist and medical oncologist at Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin Cancer Network. Dr. D'Souza, you volunteer some time to the amyloidosis support group. What advice do you participants in the group seek from you?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges is because it's a rare disease and there aren't too many physicians, healthcare providers who feel comfortable managing this disease. Patients, caregivers often feel unsupported. And so we recommend using some of these patient advocacy groups, and one of which that I volunteer my time in is the amyloidosis support groups, where we gather, we group in, there are chapters throughout the country, and we meet on a weekend where we spend like half a day talking about different questions that patients and caregivers have, talking about the disease, talking about advances on the horizon for treatment and new research that's happening. And patients and caregivers like it. I think then they go on to support other people in their local cities and towns. And what I hear from people is that the disease is not as rare as we think it to be. And everyone then tells me that, oh, now I know two other people with this disease. And mm-hmm. We thought this was super rare.
We heard from Mona Johnson, Executive Director of the International Society of Amyloidosis, which is headquartered in Madison, wrote in to say that Researchers from around the world have been collaborating to improve diagnosis and treatment for decades. And Mona says this is an exciting time with new treatments available. And at the end of May, scientists will present the latest research at the 19th Symposium on Amyloidosis to be held at Mayo Clinic. And that is May 26th through the 30th in Rochester, Minnesota. Mona also giving a shout out to amyloidosissupport.org. What are your thoughts there on the latest interventions and where the science is going on this disease?
Yeah, I think we need more research to just understand this disease better. Why does it happen in some people? We know that a lot of people have this clonal plasma cell disorder. As we get older, certain proportion of us just develop it, but not everyone gets amyloidosis. So why in some individuals these proteins misfold? And after they misfold, we will see a very heterogeneous manifestation. Some people have just their heart get involved, but whereas others will have many different organs involved with amyloidosis. So there's still a lot we need to understand about just the disease pathophysiology. But then after that, we're still looking to make our treatments better. While we now have many chemotherapy options to treat the underlying clonal disorder, we don't have drugs that work that can remove these amyloid fibrils from organs. But there are a couple that are currently in clinical trials that we need to quickly finish those trials, understand if these drugs work, and if they work, we need to get these approved through the Food and Drug Administration so they can be accessible to patients with this disease. So research at all these fronts, the basic science, translational research, and then finally clinical research.
What types of side effects might someone expect from their treatment and from their treatment journey with you?
So because our current clinical treatments are focused on controlling the clone, which are forms of chemotherapy, the side effects we can see are related to these drugs. So some of our therapies can cause more fluid retention. So amyloid patients already have fluid retention from heart involvement or kidney involvement. And sometimes these drugs can make these effects worse. So a lot of times my patients feel worse when they start treatment in those first few months before they start feeling better. And so it's really important to provide very good and close multidisciplinary supportive care during those first difficult months to get over some of these toxicities of treatment, as well as just the effects of amyloidosis, the symptoms of amyloidosis. And it's only when we lower those precursors, proteins down, and we start seeing organs get better, it's then that patients start feeling better.
Dr. Anita D'Souza with us, Milwaukee-based hematologist, medical oncologist, as we talk about amyloidosis and treatments of this disease. Call in with a question or comments, 800-642-1234. Dr. D'Souza, in terms of the hereditary aspect, the medical technology CRISPR can edit genes to help treat certain illnesses, diseases. Could CRISPR gene editing technologies be effective for people with this genetic condition?
Yes, there is actually a study that was just recently published within the last year or so. And there is a clinical trial that is ongoing using this technology. So there is a lot of hope and a lot of excitement. Certainly not as relevant for the AL subtype, but could be something of value in other subtypes of amyloidosis.
Is the medical community coming any closer to a possible cure?
So the current way we understand and think of AL amyloidosis, we see this as a disease of aging. As we get older, some of us develop a plasma cell clonal disorder. But how do we make these proteins not misfold? I think that protein misfolding is something that can occur with aging. So yes, there are aspects of this disease that are related to aging, but we are far from understanding this fully, and how do we then use this knowledge to result in treatments?
In our last moments here together, is there an aspect that you're looking forward to in your own research in amyloidosis?
So as I'd mentioned earlier, patients tell us that they have had symptoms for many months to years. Mm-hmm. And when we investigate this their journey through the healthcare system, what we recognize is that they are seeking help, they are going to different doctors and specialists, but it still takes a long time to get to that diagnosis. And what we are trying to understand is this this journey through the healthcare system, where we are using health records, medical records, to understand what are the different diagnoses these people are being diagnosed with, and can we develop clinical algorithms that could help predict that a given person, based on the different manifestations that they are having, could have amyloidosis. So maybe we can include triggers in the healthcare record that this patient could potentially have amyloidosis, consider doing a biopsy or consider referring to hematology. So we are hoping that using these tools, developing these tools, could help move that timeline to diagnosis months to even years earlier.
Yes, harnessing big data there to lead to a more efficient diagnosis. Dr. D'Souza, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. Dr. Anita D'Souza, hematologist and medical oncologist at Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin Cancer Network. And for disclosure, Froedtert and Medical College of Wisconsin is a business sponsor of WPR. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.